Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today we're going to be talking about a strip that's about to return for its second season. It's Firebrand, and I have one of their creators, Erica Lewis, joining me today. Erica, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about Firebrand, but I always like to ask everybody before they dive into whatever project about sort of their secret origins. So let's get a little bit of your background. Obviously the writer on Firebrand, your storyteller. Did you grow up reading comics? And at what point did you decide to make the leap from kind of fan or reader to creator, so to speak?
Well, let's see. So I grew up reading comics back in the day. Yes. Everything from, I think I started with Fantastic Four, which I know everybody likes to put down these days in some ways, but it was one of my favorites growing up. And then a lot of the other Marvel characters, Superman, DC, and Wonder Woman, of course. And then, I was a huge TV fan from the beginning. It didn't matter what it was from, when I was really little, the original Battlestar Galactica came on and, Star Wars was all coming out. I mean, special effects were just sort of coming into fruition with Lucas when I was young, and we were the beneficiaries of all the new video games and everything that came out from that. So I sort of grew up in the geek world, I guess you call it. Although, I don't think we ever knew we were nerds or geeks or whatever we were back then. Everybody just sort of was doing their thing. And then as I ended up working in television in L.A., I got lucky enough, on the creative side. I had been working on scripted television, as what they call the development and current executive out here. And, I ended up, working for a network that was called G4. I don't know if you even remember G4, but
G4 was G4. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So G4 was my home for a while. And I was in charge of the studio, I guess you call it, the in-house production. So I was working with Attack of the Show and X-Play. And, it was just a wonderful time. I mean, E3s and Comic-Cons and being live and meeting everybody. And just, it was just such a wonderful rush. And while I was there, I had been writing. I went back and got another degree in creative writing, a fellowship degree from Stony Brook University and some things like that. But I had started writing some comics and some novels, and I was fortunate because my first graphic novel there was picked up and published by, ironically, of all places, Heavy Metal Magazine. And Heavy Metal, when Grant Morrison was most recently editing there, and then they put out the graphic novel trade of it. So that's kind of where I cut my teeth in my first book, and then I have some prose as well from Tor. I wrote a book called Game of Shadows, and have a new series that hasn't been announced that's coming off of them on the prose side of things. And somewhere in the middle of all that, after we left Tor, I was fortunate enough, Jessica Chobot, who had been also working with me there, she and I wanted to write a story about witches. So we sat down together and we just developed Firebrand, and we took it to Legendary, and that was at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016. I recently looked at the first time we started, the emails that went back and forth, so we've been writing it ever since.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about how Firebrand came to be with you and Jessica, but before we dive into that, just can you give a quick kind of synopsis, kind of the elevator pitch, if you will, for any of our listeners who may not be familiar with Firebrand, kind of what's it all about?
Yeah, so it's the story about a young woman named Natalie Pisano. She's in her early 20s, but it's still a bit of a coming-of-age story. It's about a girl who never really fit into her father's perfect world. He was a politician. Her mother died when she was born, right afterwards. And she was growing up with a step parent, and as a young kid, bad things would happen, and she didn't realize that she was Sorgan. And one day, something really catastrophic happened, And it propels her to sort of run away, and she runs right into the arms of her aunt, who's waiting for her, a la, you know, like a Sabrina the Teenage Witch, in a sense. The aunt comes in, and she's going to teach her all about who and what she is. But she whisks her off to a hidden city in the Basque Mountains of Spain called Eder, where a lot of the mythology has been taken from. And she with a bunch of other witches who have sort of cut themselves off from society, something with the history being during the Spanish Inquisition, when they were burning a lot of witches and killing people, they sort of, you know, hit themselves off instead of hurting humans. But there is an evil sect that is hurting humans, a dark side of them. And so she grows up and she becomes a protector in her world, and she's sent right back to Seattle, which is where she's from, because we all know Seattle is infested with all kinds of dark and creepy things. So she's sent back there to protect us from being eaten by them.
Yeah, what is it about Seattle? I don't know if you're familiar with the project Black Magic, the title Black Magic, from Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott, and theirs is Seattle as well.
So yeah.
What is with Seattle and witches?
That's funny. So. You know what it is that Seattle has such an interesting history, because there's a city under the city. So, you know, when the city was originally built, they didn't think about the water table, and it flooded. And all of the lumberjacks and the, I don't know, the gold rush people, a lot of people were coming back to the city. Winter was coming on, and so they were coming down out of the cold country in the mountains. And so they had to rebuild it quickly. And so when that happened, instead of tearing it all down, they built the city on top of the city. And so if you walk the sidewalks, like down by the waterfront and stuff, there's glass, you know, little squares in the sidewalk so that you can get light underneath, because they still give tours of it. So there's like the bottom floors of buildings that are all down there. And, you know, in our minds, just, you know, the perfect place to invest. You know, soul-sucking vampires.
So. Yeah, you mentioned your...
What else would be down there?
Yeah, exactly, right? I've never been. Right. One of my wife's really close friends lives there. We always threaten to go. So I did not know that about Seattle. I have to, when I go visit, which I will, I'll have to do some exploring. It sounds like a really cool place.
Yeah, take the tour, because if you take the tour that's at night, just beware, because 95% of the conversation is about the different kinds of brothels that exist. So just make sure you're really comfortable with wherever it is you're going. Because I was with a bunch of business people when we first went down. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. But you know, it's fascinating. It's really interesting. It's really cool. So.
Yeah, you mentioned your collaborator on the project, Jessica Chobot. I wonder, do you remember that first conversation where you decided, okay, we want to do something together. We want to tell a story. We want it to be very visual. So comics would be a great medium. And then this idea of Firebrand, like the seed of the idea was planted. Was there a specific moment? Did it happen over a series of times that you spent together? Or does one particular moment stand out in time where Firebrand was really born?
Well, Jessica's really busy. So, I mean, I am too, but in a different way. And so, like, she's, you know, got a full-time job, you know, on Nerdist and all that. And so when we were meeting, when we first left G4, and she was, I think Nerdist was, she was just, you know, switching over there or whatever it was going on. She came over to the west side where I live. We ate at a breakfast place by my house, and we sat down, and I remember taking out a notebook and saying, okay, you know, what do we want to do a comic about? Because neither of us really wanted, you know, superheroes, that wasn't what we connect on. You know, for Jess and I, it's like creepy things. She loves, you know, she does bizarre states. She loves things that are haunted and creepy and kind of scary. And I have always gravitated towards these sort of coming-of-age stories and writing for middle grade and YA and younger, you know, adult, but still young adults. And so for me, I wanted to sort of tap into something that I felt like, you know, growing up watching Charmed and watching these different shows, I wanted to tap into witches, but I also wanted to tap into something that I had sort of discovered myself and I didn't feel like had had a lot of attention. And when I was living in London in my I think it was my junior year of college, I did a lot of traveling. My family's from Europe, all over the place. And so I was traveling around to different parts of Europe, and in the Basque Mountains, I discovered that, you know, they had this incredible mythology that was very Celtic in nature, and in terms of the, you know, having female deity heads and, you know, being, but also centered around, it had a witchcraft element to it. And so I felt like, you know, I was like, I really wanted to do something with that because I felt like it hadn't been at the forefront of anything like Greek mythology has been and Roman mythology. Everybody, you know, Percy Jackson, people have all seen that, but this was something a little different. And I was like, okay, I you know, so I did a lot of research and talked to a lot of, you know, people because I tended to weigh in with experts if I'm going to do that and make sure I'm not doing something really strangely wrong. And then, you know, kind of brought it to her as like, let's set it in this world because it's a really original kind of witch world, and then we'll extrapolate from there. And that's what we did.
So you kind of came up with the framework of the story, and then did you help with more of the details, or was it more like,
you know, character? I pitched her the idea of doing something around this Basque mythology. I pitched her the idea of, you know, she said yes on, she's like, I want to do witches. And I'm like, I want to do witches too. And then I said, okay, I've got the perfect thing. Let's play with this. Natalie's character itself, was something that was kind of just born out of those things that we really liked. I mean, I think that, you know, we came together on all of the character creation and sort of what it was, and I would say we just sat down at that lunch and said, okay, so she'll be the main character, and then there's got to be this character and that character, and, you know, we wanted to do something that was very home feeling and sort of Natalie finding a home, because when she comes back to Seattle, it's sort of like, you know, the island of misfit toys. There's Lucan, and then there's Pren, and her aunt, Selena, who's a bit of a hard-ass, and tends to be very stoic in nature. She doesn't say a whole lot, but what she does is she's huge-hearted. I mean, and in season two, you see a lot more of that. But she is a woman who takes in, you know, those who are sort of cast out. And Lucan and Pren were these kids that she sort of took in, and now kind of, quote-unquote, worked for her in Seattle. And so when Natalie comes back, she's got this sort of built-in family that she walks into.
And so building out that character, so you have the world, you have the idea, and then you and Jessica start bouncing ideas for the characters that inhabit this world, fleshing out and kind of breathing life into them. How much fun was that? Like being able to sit down with your friend and say, okay, we're finally going to do it. We're finally going to tell a story. It's going to be a comic. We're going to get this incredible artist to draw it. That had to be just, it's such a joy for you to be able to like create this world with one of your good friends.
Well, yeah. And then every week, you know, the way, you know, I do most of the writing, she does notes and editing. And so she does more of the story. And so basically I would go up when she was doing Bizarre States, and at the time they were taping it, what is it called? It's a comic store up on Sunset. I'm blanking on it right now. The big one. So they used to, you know what I'm talking about? They used to tape there. And we would go to the coffee shop across the street and sit there and literally bet who was going to get eaten this week by the vampire, asked by the Guahona. Who was going to get me? Like, you're just sitting there like, this is the strangest thing ever. And, you know, and then we'd go back and forth on some of the dialogue on stuff. You know, when we originally wrote the first season of Firebrand, we wrote it as 6 single issues. And then it wasn't until after Legendary had already, I think we'd delivered all of them, that Legendary was like, okay, well, we're going to do this with Webtoons. So they sort of recut that first season to fit on Webtoon. And so it was really great in the second season, because the second season we write the scripts directly for Webtoon. So it's been a really... you know, it's funny to watch the comments because you see the differences. And they're like, oh my gosh, the artwork has changed so much. And I'm like, ah, because Claudia now gets to actually do it for Webtoon. Because originally, I think the deal came in later. So,
yeah, it's I mean, I didn't notice it, so to speak, in the first season that it wasn't, you know, I don't think that the format, that vertical scroll, hurt it, but it didn't, Claudia didn't know, so she didn't take advantage of that. And in the first couple of episodes of season two, you do notice that she's kind of taking advantage of the format a little more. And you and Jessica get to play with kind of the plot and the pacing as well, because even though it's not a motion comic, just that kind of that act of vertically scrolling does give it kind of the illusion of motion sometimes, if you know what I mean. And you can't.
Oh, it's so great. It is so great. And I mean, just to be able to, you know, like at the end of one of them where the poor seer gets her head chopped off and just, you know, Claudia's got the blood like scrolling down the button. You know, we write those things into the script. So, you know, she also sometimes takes great liberty with things, which is really fun too. And when you're writing the single issues, it's a different format. I mean, you know, you're strictly, you're kept to X number of spaces on a page, and you can only craft the scene a certain way, whereas when you're doing it on Webtoon, it's just freeing because you're literally doing almost one moment in time all the way through. It is like a little motion capture. It's like a little mini, you know, movie. I it's funny because I'm on another project I work on, and we have music in there, and it's interesting. Sometimes the music takes away from me from what I'm reading. It's like I have a hard time listening to music and reading at the same time, or writing to music. I know a lot of people do. I get distracted very easily. So it's fun for me to just see it scroll up without, you know, just, you know, I can do it at my own pace, and you can make it bigger and smaller and more looking at things. And I love watching.
So. Yeah, it's great. I mean, you can separate those panels, draw it out, build tension, suspense, those kind of things, get really impactful. Because regardless of, you know, if you're scanning a comic, you know, a regular traditional print comic, if you turn the page and kind of scan, or if you stick to the traditional, you know, start in the upper left and go down to the lower right, you can't help but almost subconsciously get a feel for what's there on the page when you turn it. And so I feel like it kind of loses, you can lose impact a little bit. Whereas when you're scrolling on Webtoon, that image is completely not in your field of vision whatsoever, not in your peripheral vision, nothing. And then you scroll,
yeah,
and all of a sudden it's there, and it can be very impactful and really, it gives you an opportunity to do really cool things as a creator, I imagine.
Yeah, it's great. And Claudia, it's funny because, you know, working with her, she's such talent. I mean, she's Eisner nominated for a good reason. She's just, she's so incredible. And we went back and forth a lot on the initial character designs. And then as we started to push forward in the series, each character, she brought them so much to life that, like, one of the characters who is, Lucan's girlfriend right now, Mary, she, we were going to kill her off. We were just going to get her have her eaten. And then all of a sudden, we're like, I don't know, I kind of really like Mary. And so her whole storyline came into one of the things that is literally the funnest thing in season two. We've been having a really great time with that. And same with Pran. She has sort of her own storyline that, because each of these characters sort of represent a different piece of the Sorgan puzzle, so to speak. Mary being human and getting dragged into the world, same with Lucan, and Pran being a witch, but only a little bit DNA wise, so she doesn't quite have the same abilities as the others, but then all of a sudden she, you know, she comes into her own in this season. And so it's been, you know, the one thing that Webtoon does is just gives you time to spend with each of those characters. We went a little overboard some of the first, like, I don't know, five chapters. Everybody's going to be really happy because they went way long. So
you're probably happy to get back to this family that you hadn't touched in a while.
I know. Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because with... you know, I felt it's hard because people were always hitting me up on Instagram and on Twitter and wherever and saying, when is it coming back? And the hard part was that, you know, and it's every studio you work with, you have to wait for them to greenlight it. Mm-hmm. And it's process. And so, plus we work with Legendary, which has been amazing, and Webtoon, but they work with Webtoon. So the way it works is we wait for word from them whether we're doing the next season. And there was a bit of a break between the two. So it just took a little time, I think, for all of everybody to get their ducks in a row in that sense. Right. And it's like out of our control. But hopefully in the next week, if we hopefully get another season, it just kind of moves on continuously because we're pretty much almost done with the writing of season two. And Claudia is moving along quickly. So, you know, now we're uploading every week and, you know.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Claudia's work before. This is probably the most of her work I've seen. I know she's done some things for Boom, but in reading the story, you guys found such a perfect artist. I can't really imagine. It's one of those things where, you know, you talk about an iconic character like Batman or Superman, Spider-Man. They have their iconic look, but their style changes over time and depending on who the artist is, and that's fine for that. But with this story, I really can't imagine anybody of any other style, anybody but Claudia illustrating it. She just seems like her style is perfectly suited for the story you're trying to tell, the emotionality of it, kind of the lighter moments. Did you have her in mind, or did you guys seek her out? Like, how did she get involved in the project?
Well, I had been, I knew of her work at Boom. And when Jessica and I were talking to Legendary, they were asking us, and we all felt the same way, that it would be really great to find a female artist to be a three-woman team. Although, I don't want to not mention our letterer, because he's amazing, and Taylor is not a woman. But I don't want to leave him out. I always feel bad. Because, you know, lettering is just as important as everything else. We wanted a woman artist on this, you know, to sort of meld with Jessica and I in terms of mentally on what we were making. And Claudia came to my attention through Boom. I had reached out to some of the editors I had worked with and got connected with her. And then we all sort of connected with Legendary. We had met with a couple other people at the time. But you know, it's funny because the story is, yeah, I don't want to use the word, a Catwoman kind of feel to it, but it's a hybrid of a Catwoman and Scooby-Doo. Do you know what I mean? There's sort of this witchy part to it that's got this edge to it that's also kind of sexy in a way, but then there's these moments of extreme hilarity and moments where you're in a really gory situation, but part of the time you can just laugh at it because that's Jessica and my sense of humor, and Claudia just fits in perfectly with that.
Yeah, she does, like I said, an incredible job. And you're right about Taylor. I've met Taylor before. We've talked about lettering and how underappreciated it is.
I know.
He's such a great – he's so knowledgeable. And you know, if you're ever at a show, listeners, and Taylor's there, I implore you to go and seek him out and just have him talk to you a little bit about kind of the thought process behind lettering. There's so much more to it than you realize. Like, the letter has so much to do with how – like the pace at which you read the comic, and you don't realize how much that affects the story. You know, the cadence of people's words can change the meaning of what the writer's putting down. And it's an unsung part. It's kind of like a baseball umpire or, you know, referee in football. When you're doing your job right and well, nobody notices you and you get no credit. But if you mess it up, if you mess it up, you get all the blame. If you've ever seen a poorly lettered comic, it's terrible. It's really a chore to read.
It's true, and it's funny because, you know, I'm the queen of forgetting to put in, like, where we location, because especially, like, in Firebrand or in season two, we switch a lot from Seattle to go to Eater, and then we also go to a couple other places in Europe on this traveling trail where they're trying to figure something out, and I'm like, oh, I'm like, well, I have to go all the way back to the scripts. And then there is, like, you know, where you put that little, the end bit, especially when you're crafting with webchat, it's different than crafting with an issue, with a trade. So there's also, you know, it's funny, it was interesting, funny, strange, however you want to phrase it, doing the trade of the first season, because some of the lettering, Taylor probably, well, I know he had to adjust things and move things around because you are dragging a person from frame to frame on Webtoon and it's page to page in the trade. And so things had to, you know, you move the boxes around a little bit and you play a little bit with the actual wording itself. So, yeah, you know, in terms of how it looks. just to drag him around. And yeah, it is a whole big part of comics. So
yeah, an unsung part for sure. I don't want to get too spoilery, but I did want to just touch on a couple themes. You mentioned kind of coming home again in the second season for Natalie. She's returning to Seattle. Something, you know, a lot of people can probably relate to, trying to, you know, mend fences, if you will, trying to go back to a place that maybe you don't have the best memories of. But also a big focus for me, or a big theme that I kind of got from the first season, was this idea of, you know, fitting in and trying to find your place where you belong. And then also family, mm-hmm. also huge with Natalie, you know, not to get too spoilery, but losing her mom.
Yeah.
Really early, and then, you know, issues with her dad and her stepmom, and then having, as you mentioned, her aunt come and kind of whisk her away. Again, like, kind of universal themes, right? Like, whether you have, you know, familial issues or not, I think all of us, especially in adolescence, go through a time where we're not sure what our identity is, so to speak. And so we're not sure where we fit. And I really think that's where we find Natalie as season one starts to ramp up. She's not sure who she is, where she came from, and therefore doesn't know where she fits in. And losing her mom for her kind of compounded that, because this is really the world that her aunt is pulling her into, the world of her mother, and her mother's not there to guide her anymore. So were those?
Yeah. And her mother is also, was considered, not a good person, because right. she fell in love with a human.
Right.
So there were a lot of, things that she was struggling against, you know. I came from divorced parents, step parents coming into the mix, step kids coming into the mix, you know, things, just a lot of change. And I feel like Natalie got a lot of that. You know, her life was nothing but change. But it was very comfortable in the beginning, which is what we start exploring more in season two. So in the beginning of season one, we meet her and we see her life with her dad when it was just the two of them. And their life was really quite good, other than the fact that, you know, she was clearly a witch. Things were happening. And he was trying his best to ignore it and just be like, okay, because he didn't know it, the woman that he had married was a witch, until she told him, like, a day or so before she died. And so Natalie has these idiosyncrasies, but then he remarries, and he starts Jessica and I can't help ourselves sometimes. Delve into the politics of the world too. He was running for a Senate seat. He became a politician. Her stepmother was, you know, big into trying to push that, and Natalie's little idiosyncrasies were problematic. And that's really where her struggles begin, is that she's never fit into her father's world anymore as soon as he became married and had this other identity to her. And so then when she gets to Eater, her aunt, which to learn more about, she isn't around very much, in the sense that she took her back to Eater, but she was the Yakuza in Seattle and had a life there. So although she would pop in and out, Natalie was pretty much being raised by her uncle there, and with her cousin, and who comes back into season two. And some things that we learn about her life there, which weren't very great, because she was sort of half human, which isn't really looked on as very pleasant, and her mother was also, you know, not looked on as a positive. So there's a lot of that. And as we get into season two, one of the questions we get all the time is she ever going to see her dad again? And I mean, come on, of course. So no spoilers, but let's say, I mean, that would be the fun in not running into each other at some point. So we've sort of set that up coming into season two, for that ultimately being a great confrontation scene. And then at the end of season one, when Lucien, of course, is in a coma, she has a vision, or she doesn't know exactly what it is, something of her mother that is at the end of it. So her mother's storyline and what happened to her all comes back into a much bigger bad guy scenario that's happening, that's building on what we did in season one. So where we had the soul-sucking vampire Guahonas of season one, although that comes into season two, it brings along something else with it that is even a bigger bad. And all these other storylines kind of all come together all the way throughout season two.
Yeah, I know. I did notice. It's like you're right from the start. You were planting little Easter eggs that seem like they are going to tie into each other, and it's really interesting. It made for a very immersive read, and also it's one of those things that I always tell the listeners, I really love comics that make me think, right? You want to talk about, I mean, Webtoons is free, but I talk about, you know, how expensive comics are. And if you get a comic that you're still thinking about, you know, a day later, a week later, that's more value, right? It's providing more for you.
Yeah.
And little things like, what stood out to me, or how you talked about the mixed, the children who as parents are mixed, and they're called Lost.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's the Basque word for lost, W2A. And basically, yeah, they're like, they think of them as lost children.
Yeah, that was so interesting to me because, again, it goes back to that idea of identity, right? So if you're from mixed parents, that makes it tougher for you to belong, in which case you're searching, you know, for who you are because you're lost. I just thought that was so, so interesting. Is that that idea of belonging and family, are those kind of, as a writer, are those themes that really like resonate with you?
Yeah, you know, I have a friend who tells me I write about that all the time. It's really kind of funny because you don't notice it when you first start writing. You're like, oh, I guess I do write a lot about finding a home in a weird way. Because I think that, you know, across the board, it doesn't matter who you are or where you came from. Everybody seems to be searching for something. You know, there are so few people nowadays who are just so settled into their homes and lived in the same place for their entire lives. And at least that's not been my experience. And so for me, because I am a bit of a wanderer and a traveler and kind of grew up having, you know, multiple homes and families, and as a latchkey kid, as they used to be called, where you just, you know, throw a key on, leave it like, you know, in the afternoon on a Sunday and come back, you know, when it was pitch dark out, as long as it was, you know, before 9 o'clock, and you're just letting yourself in and out. It was a different world, you know, and so for me, it is about like these characters finding something, but ultimately it's also them about finding themselves. Because I think that when you figure out where you fit in, and I do feel like a lot of people who gravitate, including myself, towards fantasy and sci-fi and other worlds in that way, and enjoy existing in those worlds, you know, we're searching for something that is going to make us feel like, okay, this is comfortable to me. You know, it's like the people who are like Star Wars versus Star Trek. Something makes you feel comfortable, you stick with it,
right,
and you like it. And so for me, you know, I think it is a common theme, and it's finding that place where you belong. Because, you know, we all want to feel like we belong. You know, in high school, not everyone was the most popular kid, you know, especially not me. So it's nice. I think those things kind of percolate through as you get older. And for me, it's a good exercise to find these characters and, like, gravitate towards writing more.
Yeah, I know. Is there a particular character that kind of relate two in that way more than another one, or one that's easier for you to write, some that are tougher because you can't relate to them in that way?
Well, I think the starting with the hardest ones for me to write are always scenes with her dad. You know, it's in season two, when in the beginning of season one and season two, and writing things that, you know, I'm putting myself, I'm a parent now, and as a kid, I came from a divorced family, and so I try really hard to put myself in that parent's position of what it would have been like to go through that, and that's hard for me, because in a weird way, I'm looking through the eyes of my own family that had gone through some of these kind of same issues, and I was never on their side, so it's always like, wait a minute, and so when I'm trying to write the character's story, it's a good exercise. It makes you really open your eyes and think about things, and writing Natalie has always been easy for me, a dream, and that way I kind of understand her character and live and breathe it. I mean, I have a lot of fun, real lot of fun this season two, writing Mary, because she's just become a great character in Pren, who has been a rock star this season too, because they kind of we knew Natalie pretty well in the last season, but we were still getting to know the others. And this season, they've sort of come to their fruition, and we know a lot more about them. And Lucan too. I mean, not to leave the boys out, but Lucan's great. Lucan is us. Lucan is the sad, poor every man, every woman who's human, who's being threatened to be eaten by something evil, and you have no ability to defend yourself.
Yeah, is there a particular character that seems to resonate with the fans more than another, or are there several favorites?
Well, in season one, it was definitely Natalie. People hated her stepmother, Judy, which was fantastic. It was so much fun to read those comments. Everybody liked Lucan. It's hard not to like Lucan. He's just such the easy guy. You know, but in season two, you know, we're just starting out. And so I'm actually really excited to see who is the favorite this season, because there are some storylines that are just, you know, we've had a lot of fun with Prem. We've had a lot of fun with Mary and with Natalie, but her story is an extension of season one, whereas the other two it's like brand new stuff. And sometimes writing for Mary has been hysterical this season. She's really funny. So
season two is just getting started. If there's one thing that you would want returning readers to know, and then maybe new readers who are looking to jump on, is there anything you would kind of want them to know going into it?
No, I mean, I would ask everyone, she keeps asking in the comments about, you know, what happened with her mother, why did she show up there, and is she ever going to see her dad again? Both those questions will be answered in this season. And so stick with it, because we didn't just drop that Easter egg in for nothing. And definitely, you know, leave comments, because we read them. We have a lot of fun with them. So
yeah, and I was curious,
good and bad.
I was curious about the initial reaction to the strip when it launched. Was it one of those webtoons that just caught fire right away, or did it take a little longer to kind of build an audience? What was that like when it first dropped?
You know, honestly, it's hard to go in and compare it to some of the other webtoons in there. You know, I don't know on the caught fire. We've always had thousands of likes, which has been amazing for us. We've had a lot of people reading it. As soon as it went up, Jessica has a great following and incredible fans who love her, so when we announced we were doing this, we got a lot of support, which was great, and it seems like they've stuck with it, which is fun. Everywhere I've gone, it's funny, and you know, if I'm out and about somewhere for a book signing, almost if I'm at a high school, without a doubt, somebody will talk to me about Firebrand, which is so funny. I mean, I think that more people read Firebrand than ever read my novel. All that work. But it's funny because it just, you know, there's just so many people in the webtoon community now. It's fantastic.
So. Yeah, it's got to be fun, too. It's just out of the blue, somebody come up and go, oh, you write Firebrand. I love that story.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I was at the teen book con in Houston, and I had finished my signing time, and there was a girl from, I think she was probably a sophomore, junior in high school. She was walking me around, and she was like, so what else do you write? And I was like, well, I write this thing on webtoon called Firebrand. She was like, oh my god, you write Firebrand? And all of a sudden, she's like running around and gathering like 10 other people, and they're all walking around asking me questions. So I was like, wow, I had no idea.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because, you know, you don't know where those people who are in the comments are. And then a girl on my daughter's hockey team, my daughter plays ice hockey, and she was like, your mom likes Firebrand. I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, you don't get that street cred with your kids' friends very often. That's awesome.
No, not at all.
Well, now that season two's ramping up and you've had a chance to kind of look back on season one, the progression of the story, did everything kind of play out as you expected? Are you pretty happy? I mean, obviously, you know, you talked about how you didn't know it was going to be a webtoon when you initially wrote it. So that's probably something, you know, it would have been good to know previously. But other than that, is there anything you would change? Or are you pretty happy with how everything turned out?
No, I mean, I'm very happy with the story. I mean, I don't usually ever look back in that way because, you know, I wish we could have continued from season one to season two a little faster, so, because I feel bad that people were so, like, frustrated for so long. But as far as the story goes, no, I think it's exactly what we were hoping for. You know, it's nice that Claudia has the freedom now to do the art specifically for Webtoon, which is great. But yeah, but otherwise it's been great.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear, and it's great to hear that you've had some really cool fan interactions, it sounds like. And I hear this from a lot of Webtoon creators, and it's one of the really great things about the Webtoon fan community. They seem to be overwhelmingly positive, and they seem to be able to do that thing that maybe the traditional comic reader can't do, because for some reason they feel like they have so much ownership over the characters. I guess they've been around, you know, for a really long time. So if you're telling a Batman story or a Superman story and the reader doesn't like it, they can be a little, you know, rough on the creators, where it seems like the Webtoon fan community, if they don't like a particular Webtoon, they just won't read it and they'll move on to something else, which is, I always advocate, you don't like something, change the channel.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the thing, that, you know, not everyone is going to like everything.
Right.
I mean, that's just the nature of things. I can't stand half the books my husband reads. He can't stand the books I read. We rarely have the same taste in anything on that. So that's why there's lots of stuff out there now. I mean, I think we're living in a time which is fantastic. There's so much out there, whether you're a younger adult or whether you're, you know, all ages. There's so much more content out there. For everybody. It's not just one genre or another. And so, you know, in that way, yeah, change the channel. It's like I hear people all the time griping about something on TV. And, you know, of course, it's always one of the shows that I like the best. But they're all griping about, you know, they're griping about Good Omens. And I'm like, hey, my show on. You know, I love that book. So, you know, for me, it's just change the channel.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And look at, I mean, the Webtoon content's free. You want to talk about a lot of content, and any genre you can think of, it's on there. So no reason not to check out some other cool Webtoons. I mean, check out Firebrand, read that. It's amazing. But check out other stuff too. And I wanted to ask you if you had a chance to talk or meet or collaborate, but kind of commiserate and compare notes with any other Webtoon creators at this point.
Yeah, and I'm always going to say that the awesome girl who writes, the woman who writes Unordinary.
Oh, yeah.
Am I going to say her name wrong? Anyway, we were on a panel together at, I think it was at Keystone. She's great. I love that Webtoon. I like Siren's Laments. I mean, I like Outrage, which launched about the same time as Cursing did another project I write on Webtoon. And I like, Tom's, Back Channel. I mean, I read all of them, but I mean, as many as I can, there's so many in there, that it's nice to have this, that they recommend things for you, and it's nice that it's kind of funny because I guess everybody probably clicks on the leaderboard, the most popular, and then works their way down, but sometimes I like to just go into the weeds and see what I can find in there. I think that the nice thing is with Legendary, we have a lot of support because it takes a lot to do a Webtoon. I don't know if everybody realizes how much time and energy, but like Unordinary, I mean, just you're working your butt off because it's just, you know, one person putting it all together, and, you know, we're a team, and I feel like I have a lot of support, which is great.
Yeah, I've had that conversation with a lot of the Webtoon creators that have come on, and I always tell them, I don't know how a weekly deadline, and you're writing it, you're drawing it, you're coloring it, you know, it's lettering, you know, sometimes they're lettering themselves, and I'd like, what?
Yeah.
I can't, it's so much respect for anybody that can do it and stick to that that kind of schedule. It really shows the passion for the story that they want to tell, that they're able to do it. And then I've even had some creators that have come on there that talked about in the beginning they were doing two a week
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, I have a hard enough time. You know, I write multiple things at once because, you know, as a writer, like, my family has to eat too. So you have to have multiple projects at the same time just to get everybody, to get everything going. And it on the, just doing the writing side alone, you know, it's, you know, to write a full chapter that is something that I'm ready to turn in, and sit down with Jessica and then turn it in after. So I make her changes and then we turn it in after that. And then it still goes through a whole other editorial process with Legendary. It takes me 3 or 4 days just on the writing side of things, because I'll write it and then I'll be like, okay, that's not the greatest idea. Let's go back and fix this part. You don't have, they have time to mull it over, you know? So, yeah, I don't know how they do it. It's amazing to me.
So that being said, how much work it actually is, would you recommend the platform to aspiring creators? I mean, it does seem to be kind of a low barrier entry.
You know, I would always recommend Webtoon. I mean, I get kids all the time asking me, oh, I want to write a Webtoon. I want to write a Webtoon and draw a Webtoon. And I think that it's an amazing platform, because the reality is that there will be no job you ever have that's harder, in a sense, because you are doing it all. It's kind of like, you know, the first people who are putting their YouTube channels up, right? You're recording it all, you're editing it all, you're doing it all. And I am so amazed at the exposure that they get, to so many people reading their material. I mean, I think you have millions of people in that platform, and they all have access to your work. And when you go on to do anything else, it's a great launching pad. It's a great place for people to see your artwork or your writing, or both if you want to do both. And, you know, it can take you to a lot of other places. I mean, I think the holy grail for some people, maybe it is writing a Marvel comic or writing a DC comic or writing, you know, for one of the, you know, a character that's already existing. But for me, my holy grail has always been seeing my own ideas and my own characters come to life. And, you know, you can do all that on Webtoon. So.
And I think another really good thing that Webtoon shows, you know, we talked about what a challenge it is to meet that weekly deadline. If you put out a Webtoon for a couple years and you're always on time, you could, I mean, you show that to an editor, that's huge right there, to show that you can put out quality work on a consistent basis and be dependable. I mean, it's one of the toughest things about creating.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of this stuff is all sort of interconnected to other things, whether you're doing it for a digital platform or print, you're working off of a deadline, and like you're saying, and like I was saying, there's no harder deadline than on Webtoon. It is literally just like you're on this train and you just got to keep it going. And some people get really shocked. I mean, I have other people I work with on some other projects, but they're like, oh my God, this is so hard. And I'm like, just got to keep going. This is the way it works. Got to get that story out every week. Otherwise, everybody gets so sad and disappointed. You don't want to disappoint everybody. So, yeah, that's one of the things we tried really hard on season 2, is we really wanted most of Firebrand done before we launched.
Right.
Which is, it took a lot longer, but we had to shut down a couple times in season 1 because Claudia had issues with something. I think she had to have knee surgery at one point, and then there was something else that happened. And so we had a couple breaks, and it was, people were not happy. And so we decided that, you know, let's just hold out. Legendary was smart. They were like, oh, let's just hold out and wait until we've got, you know, we're almost done. And that way we have no breaks this season. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think that's a smart strategy, because then you don't lose momentum, you know, for the reader. It can be kind of tough sometimes if there are those
breaks. I mean, there's nothing worse for me when I'm reading a book, even a novel series. Like, you know, I'll be reading, you know, I picked up one of the YA fantasy novels, the Red Queen series, Victoria Aveyard, and you're like, okay, cliffhanger ending, you suck, and I have to wait 9 months to get another book. It's the same thing, you know? So I did learn that I think it's better to not leave people on a cliffhanger ending every time, but maybe it's better to give somebody some kind of satisfaction and then, you know, you have to come back anyway.
Yeah, so. It's okay to leave some threads dangling, but
give them. Yeah, but not like, you know, like season 1, we left Lucan in a coma.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like a soap opera. It's a telenovela. He's just laying out there. is he coming back? So
what's gonna happen? Yeah, that, I mean, well, that's the reason everybody was clamoring for it to come back. He left us all high and dry.
Yeah, and I felt everybody's pain because I hate it when people do that to me. But yeah. So.
All right, lesson learned. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, Erica. I know the deadline always looms, as we were saying, but if there's one piece of advice, you know, we're talking about aspiring creators. If there's one piece of advice for somebody who's about to start a webtoon or is in the process of getting going, what would it be? What would you like to pass along? What knowledge that you've gained?
Well, if it was specifically a webtoon, I mean, the most important thing, I think, for any writing is to read. It's okay to watch TV, and it's okay to look at other platforms in terms of that. But if you're wanting to write comics, if you're wanting to write whatever it is, novels, whatever, think, read as much as you can. Not even just in the thing that you want to write, whether it's fantasy or not, you know, contemporary fiction, and in webtoons specifically. Read all different kinds of webtoons, because there are some that are more manga looking, you know, there are some that feel very like right out of Korea, that are amazing, and they have one kind of look to them, and then there's like Outrage is totally different and wacky and right out of somebody's head who was writing, I think, Daredevil. You know, I think they were in Daredevil. And so everybody has a different style, but and by reading others, you kind of figure out more along the lines of what you want yours to be. There's no shame in, it's not copying, but there's no shame in learning from other people and using a craft that, you know, it's the best form of flattery is if somebody's mimicking what you're doing and likes it so much that they want to create something that feels similar. And that's what, don't be afraid to do that. Just read as much as you can within webtoon if you want to make a webtoon, because that's how you're going to learn how to do it. On the back end of things, I am not good with computer systems, software. If it comes to artwork, whether you're working on a tablet or an iPad, I am not the person to give any advice on that. I draw with pencils, and then I shove the sketches off somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, I barely know how to draw. But on the writing side, for me, it's just, you know, really understanding the platform. And don't be afraid to reach out to people either and ask, you know, Google webtoon scripts so you can see what one looks like and how you write comic scripts. Because that's its own structure. So everything has a different structure to it.
Yeah, definitely a couple good pieces of advice there, listeners. So take them to heart if you're an aspiring webtoon creator. Is there anything else you want to share, Erica? Anything else you have coming up that you want to plug or people should be getting ready to check out?
Well, I have a new novel series coming from Tortine, but it hasn't been announced yet, so I can only tease that it's coming, and I've finished the first manuscript, and I'm very excited about it, but they haven't announced it yet, so hopefully in the next couple of weeks that'll come out, and what else is coming up soon? I guess that's kind of it. Just tune in and get the next chapter of Firebrand. Leave comments, please.
Yeah, definitely. And where's the best place to follow you online so when that book does get announced, the book series does get announced, people will know what it is?
I'm on Instagram and on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but honestly, I don't use it as much as I should. I kind of just want to get everything up. It's just at Erica Ely, E-L-Y, which is my middle name, Lewis, because I think there was another at Erica Lewis. But you can find me in there. And then also I have a website it's just ericalewis.com.
Great. And I'll put links to all of Erica's social media in the show notes, everybody, so you can go there and check it out. So Erica, awesome. thanks for joining me. Congratulations on the strip and for season 2 finally coming back. And I can't wait to see how it all unfolds.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.